Geeks, nerds, and gamers are rejoicing today. A new book, Ready Player 2, is out. It's the sequel to Ernest Cline's 2011 best-selling futuristic sci-fi novel, Ready Player 1. The first book takes place in a bleak future. The Earth is ravaged by climate change. People spend most of their time inside the Oasis. It's a virtual reality world created by eccentric game designer James Halliday. Steven Spielberg adapted Ready Player One into a film in 2018.
These days, reality is a bummer. Everyone's looking for a way to escape. And that's why Halliday, that's why he was such a hero to us. He showed us that we could go somewhere without going anywhere at all.
And now Ready Player Two gets its turn in the spotlight. Ernest Cline joins me now on Skype to talk about it. Ernest, welcome.
Oh, thanks for making time with me. It's good to speak with you, too.
Sure. And so these books, it's amazing. You've created a world that is ravaged by climate change, crushed by economic catastrophe. There's even a mention of a rogue virus in there. How prophetic are you feeling right about now?
Well, you know, I don't want to be too prophetic since I envision a dystopian future and I have two little girls. I don't want them to grow up in a future like that. So I'm hoping that I'm not as prophetic as it currently seems.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no doubt that people have wanted to escape 2020 and they definitely want to escape 2045 when your books are set. For people who aren't familiar with the virtual world that you've created in Ready Player One and now with Ready Player Two, tell us about the Oasis.
Well, the Oasis is a virtual reality that's replaced the internet, and people go to school there, people work there, people just meet up to hang out there. The creator of the virtual world, James Halliday, dies in the opening pages of Ready Player One and kind of leaves behind a posthumous message announcing a contest where he's going to give away his fortune and control of the virtual world to whoever can find these Easter eggs that are hidden throughout the virtual world.
And that brings us to the protagonist of both books, Wade Watts, a young man who, just like everybody else on Earth, is totally addicted and hooked into this virtual world. What do people need to know about Wade as part two of the story gets underway?
Well, geez, that would entail giving spoilers for Ready Player One.
But
we're going to assume
that
9 years after publication, if you're listening to this, spoiler warning. But Wade and several of his friends win James Halliday's contest in the first book and inherit control of the Oasis. In Ready Player Two, I kind of show them struggling with the ethics and the ramifications of their technology and how it affects people's lives, kind of like the heads of the social media platforms that we have in present day are doing at the moment.
Well, right. There's a feeling in book two, and again, we're not going to give away any of the major plot points here, but there is a feeling that the technology, which has advanced since Ready Player One, in the Oasis, it's advanced. And there's a sense that it's getting dangerous. Is that a risk in the real world as we get deeper and deeper into artificial intelligence and virtual reality? I mean, are you trying to say that we should be careful?
Yeah, well, we have to be careful with all of our technology. And I'm not, you know, I don't think any, you know, most technology is not black or white. I think any technology that's that powerful and used by that many people, billions of people around the world, there's always going to be a good side to it and a bad side to it. So I try to show the characters wrestling with that. And the technology in Ready Player One is mostly virtual reality. And the problem that I had is in the 9 years since Ready Player One was published, virtual reality is no longer science fiction, partly because of my novel. it became like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And a lot of the people at Oculus and HTC Vive and the other companies that are working on virtual reality technology in the present day took inspiration from Ready Player One.
Is that right? So you'll take some credit for that.
I wouldn't if they hadn't told me that and given me that credit. You know, I got invited to Oculus in the early days before they got out by Facebook, and they had a meeting room that was named the Oasis after my book, and they also told me they gave a copy of my novel to every single employee when they were hired. And they told me that there were certain things that I imagined in the book, like things describing the virtual reality interface, that they just lifted wholesale, like Oculus Home, like having an offline virtual space that you, when you first log in, that you're inside. That was something that I depicted in Ready Player One, and then they made it a reality. So I was really lucky to imagine a lot of this stuff right before the technology existed for people to really make it in the real world.
And now we're watching virtual reality evolve. And since you seem to be some kind of a prognosticator on this issue, what do you see in the future? I mean, do you think we'll be at a point, you know, where we have total immersive virtual reality, which is something that you kind of flirt with in Ready Player Two? It starts to get really real.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. It's the brain-computer interface is what I touch on in Ready Player 2, which is where we're headed. It's the final step in the evolution of video games and virtual reality when the simulation becomes indistinguishable from real life. Right now, Elon Musk and a bunch of other venture capitalists and people in Silicon Valley are already working on a brain-computer interface and doing human trials with people who are willing to have their skull cut open and have electronics and electrodes put into their gray matter.
Okay, danger, red light flashing there. What are your thoughts about that?
Yes, but also a really good thing. Like right now, because of the medical applications, I think is what has driven a lot of this. Like there are already blind people who can see as a result of having a camera mounted on a pair of glasses with electrodes wired into their brain. Like blind people in a very limited way, there are already blind people who can see. And then there's the cochlear implant, which is really kind of a bionic ear that allows the hearing impaired people to hear. So, and these are all brain implants to a degree.
I hear you. And I've, you know, having reported on virtual reality before, I mean, that's what all the proponents of it say. You know, like there's so many medical applications, there's so many real world applications, but should we be giving ourselves up in the way that you just described?
Yeah. And like we already kind of have that dilemma right now, right? With Twitter and Facebook, like how much of your life do you give it? And I have so many friends that are addicted to social media and they try to stop and they can't, but it's just so compelling. It like hits that dopamine rush in your brain by design. And it's designed to be engaging like that. So as our entertainment and our technology just gets better and better, the impulse to escape completely from reality would become greater and greater, I think. And then once you have a video game or a virtual reality simulation that feels just as good or better than reality, and it's a reality that you have control over, unlike the real world, then I feel like you would see people, you know, just a huge chunk of the population would want to escape into that reality and never come out.
Well, let me ask you, do you like it? Do you like virtual reality? Because the only time I ever tried it, I got sick to my stomach. I was sweating bullets. I mean, I physically hated it.
Yeah, well, that might have been an early version of it. That happened to me the first few times that I tried it, and they've made huge improvements since then. There were problems with motion sickness and latency and stuff in the early versions, but I have the answer is yes. I use virtual reality all the time, especially this past year in quarantine. I ended up buying an Oculus Quest headset for pretty much everyone in my family and all of my friends just so I could get together and hang out with them in virtual reality since I wasn't able to see them in person. So every week now I get together with friends all over the country and hang out in a shared kind of virtual living room space. And we watch movies and play Risk and hang out. My wife and I had our wedding anniversary in virtual reality this past summer because it was the only way.
How did she feel about that?
We didn't have a choice, you know, it was exciting because we actually had all of our friends and family, a bunch of people who were at our wedding, and we were using a VR app called Big Screen that allows you to stream video and photos off your computer on a big screen while everyone sits in a virtual theater together. And so we were showing video and photos from our wedding. It was not as nice as getting to have an actual wedding anniversary party, but in the summer of 2020, it seemed pretty great. It seemed like we had mastered social distancing. You know, it's really surprising. It's different than a Zoom call. You know, everybody spent a lot of time on Zoom calls this year, but there's something qualitatively different about being in a shared virtual space. You really feel like you hung out together.
Ernest Cline, I'm sure your fans are going to want to know, is Ready Player 2 going to be made into a movie by Steven Spielberg, just like your first book was?
I would like to know that as well.
I'm sure you would.
Well, it seems like there's a chance. There's a good chance, but we're still in the early stages of that. But you know, he did call and check in a few times on me while I was writing it, and I did share early draft of the book with him just to get his feedback, which he was kind enough to give me.
What did he say?
He asked for more of his favorite character, a character from the first book, Nolan Sorrento. This is another spoiler. He shows up in the second book, and Steven said, you know, I wanted more Sorrento. And I think it's because he's really good friends with Ben Mendelsohn, the actor who portrays Nolan Sorrento in our film. So I told him I would definitely put more Sorrento in the book, and that I would also let Ben Mendelsohn know that Steven was looking out for him.
And just real quick before I let you go, science fiction and fantasy writers often use this platform that they have to address other things going on in the world. We've kind of touched on this a little bit, but what do you think you're trying to accomplish with these two books? I mean, do you foresee a future as bleak as the one that you've laid out here?
I do if we continue on the current path that we're on, where we, you know, stick our heads in the sand and pretend that climate change isn't real. My primary goal is to tell a good story and to entertain people. And I want people to have, you know, an enjoyable, fun action adventure ride. But I can't help but weave some of my own worldview into the story. The technology in Ready Player 2 that I described, this brain computer interface, I wanted to touch on the idea of an empathy machine. I think empathy is something we're in dire need of, people to be able to put themselves in each other's shoes. And that's one application of this brain computer interface technology, I think, is being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And some people who aren't capable of doing that on their own, I think it could be hugely beneficial if there was a technology that could teach people to be empathetic. It would make the world a much better place. I think a lot of the problems that we're facing right now could be traced back to a lack of empathy.
Ernest Cline, the new book is Ready Player 2. It's out today. It's the sequel to his best-selling Ready Player 1. Ernest, thank you. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
It was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.